Conclusion: Listening with your eyes. Abbie Conant was in Italy, playing trombone for the Royal Opera of Turin. This was in 1980. That summer, she applied for 11 openings for various orchestra jobs throughout Europe. She got one response: the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra. "Dear Herr Abbie Conant," the letter began. In retrospect, that mistake should have tripped every alarm bell in Conant's mind. The audition was held in the Deutsches Museum in Munich, since the orchestra's cultural center was still under construction. There were 33 candidates, and each played behind a screen, making them invisible to the selection committee. Screened auditions were rare in Europe at that time, but one of the applicants was the son of someone in one of the Munich orchestras. So, for the sake of fairness, the Philharmonic decided to make the first round of auditions blind. Conant was number 16. She played Ferdinand David's Concertina for Trombone, which is the warhorse audition piece in Germany, and missed one note. She cracked a G. She said to herself, "That's it," and went backstage and started packing up her belongings to go home. But the committee thought otherwise. They were floored. Auditions are classic thin-slicing moments. Trained classical musicians say they can tell whether a player is good or not almost instantly, sometimes in just a few bars, sometimes even with just the first note. And with Conant, they knew. After she left the audition room, the Philharmonic's music director, Sergei Celibidache, cried out, "That's who we want!" The remaining 17 players, waiting their turn to audition, were sent home. Somebody went backstage to find Conant. She came back into the audition room, and when she stepped out from behind the screen, she heard the Bavarian equivalent of woe. "Was ist denn das? Sacre die! Meine Götter! Gottes Willen!" They were expecting Herr Conant. This was Frau Conant. It was an awkward situation, to say the least. Celibidache was a conductor from the old school, an imperious and strong-willed man with very definite ideas about how music ought to be played and about who ought to play music. What's more, this was Germany, the land where classical music was born. Once, just after the Second World War, the Vienna Philharmonic experimented with an audition screen and ended up with what the orchestra's former chairman, Otto Strasser, described in his memoir as a grotesque situation. An applicant qualified himself as the best, and as the screen was raised, there stood a Japanese before the stunned jury. To Strasser, someone who was Japanese simply could not play with any soul or fidelity music that was composed by a European. To Celibidache, likewise, a woman could not play the trombone. The Munich Philharmonic had one or two women on the violin and the oboe, but those were feminine instruments. The trombone is masculine. It is the instrument that men played in military marching bands, and composers of operas used it to symbolize the underworld. In the Fifth and Ninth Symphonies, Beethoven used the trombone as a noisemaker. "Even now, if you talk to your typical professional trombonist," Conant says, "they will ask, 'What kind of equipment do you play?'" Can you imagine a violinist saying, "I play a Black and Decker"? It was simply unimaginable that a woman could play the trombone well. And once Celibidache and the rest of the committee saw her in the flesh, all those long-held prejudices began to compete with the winning first impression they had of her performance. There were two more rounds of auditions. Conant passed both with flying colors. She joined the orchestra, and Celibidache stewed. A year passed. In May of 1981, Conant was called to a meeting. She was to be demoted to second trombone, she was told. No reason was given. Conant went on probation for a year to prove herself again. It made no difference. "You know the problem," Celibidache told her. "We need a man for the solo trombone." Conant had no choice but to take the case to court. In its brief, the orchestra argued, "The plaintiff does not possess the necessary physical strength to be a leader of the trombone section." Conant was sent to the Gaudinger Lung Clinic for extensive testing. She blew through special machines, had a blood sample taken to measure her capacity for absorbing oxygen, and underwent a chest exam. She scored well above average. The nurse even asked if she was an athlete. The case dragged on. The orchestra claimed that Conant's shortness of breath was overhearable in her performance of the famous trombone solo in Mozart's Requiem, even though the guest conductor of those performances had singled out Conant for praise. A special audition in front of a trombone expert was set up. Conant played 7 of the most difficult passages in the trombone repertoire. The expert was effusive. The orchestra claimed that she was unreliable and unprofessional. It was a lie. After 8 years, she was reinstated as first trombone. But then another round of battles began that would last another 5 years because the orchestra refused to pay her on par with her male colleagues. She won again. She prevailed on every charge, and she prevailed because she could mount an argument that the Munich Philharmonic could not rebut. Sergiu Zelibidache, the man complaining about her ability, had listened to her play Ferdinand David's Concertino for Trombone under conditions of perfect objectivity, and in that unbiased moment he had said, "That's who we want," and sent the remaining trombonists packing. Abby Conant was saved by the screen.